Beyond Fifth Street, written by Story of Eden and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom Harry Potter. Rating explicit. No archive warnings apply. Characters: Luna Lovegood, Dean Thomas, Ron Weasley, Hermione Granger, Neville Longbottom, Draco Malfoy, Ginny Weasley, George Weasley, Harry Potter. Additional tags: post-canon, post-war, heavy angst, post-traumatic stress disorder, infidelity, implied referenced incest, drug use, prostitution, underground fights, strippers and strip clubs, codependency, implied reference cheating. This is not a happy fic. Everyone has a vice. Hurt no comfort, no happy ending. Summary. There was a little muggle cafe on one corner of Fifth Street. Every evening, their friends go through the small magical door at the back. "Come on, Luna," Dean called as he passed, holding out his free hand. She took it and followed him back up the stairs. There was a little muggle cafe on one corner of Fifth Street. Every morning, Dean and Luna met for a bit of breakfast. Those first weeks, neither of them ate very much, choosing instead to sit in silence. It was the kind of quiet they needed, with none of the hollow words others seemed to give them. No. The sounds of the espresso machine and the chatter of customers, it was proof that a normal life could be out there somewhere. Really, they deserved it after what they'd been through. They all deserved it. And after a couple of months, Luna could tell stories about creatures, and Dean could ramble about a football game he'd watched. They could laugh a bit, and their souls felt a bit freer, a bit less stained. Then, it wasn't just breakfast. It was a spot of tea or a cup of coffee, a late dinner after a terrible date, and an early lunch before a work meeting. For nearly a year, Dean and Luna had been meeting at a small muggle cafe, because there, they were just that, Dean and Luna. And for months, they've seen their friends come and go through the small, magical door at the back.
"That makes me sound a lot cooler than I was," Ron mumbled.
"Stuff like that always sounds cooler than it really was," said Harry. "I've been trying to tell you that for years." When Ron walked into the Muggle Cafe, he felt the tension in his shoulders ease, and he felt like he could finally breathe again when he walked through the small, inconspicuous door at the back. Down the dark street and across the square, he took the same path he always did. The bench, his favorite one, was next to a large tree. In a way, it reminded him of the one at his mum's house. When he was a little boy, Bill and Charlie built a treehouse in it. Fred and George took it over when the older boys left, but it never went to Ron. Maybe that's why he liked this tree. Maybe that's why he liked the bench and the way the grass felt beneath his feet when he took off his shoes. It all reminded him of the big sign that said, "Ron, keep out." Because before, he was just that. Ron. Ron Weasley. Not Ron Weasley, Order of Merlin First Class. Not Ron Weasley, the real hero, as Rita Skeeter had put it once. He lay down on the bench, not bothering with the cushioning charm as he stared up at the stars through the branches of the trees. He felt small again. This place reminded him of his mom's cinnamon biscuits and denoming the garden on hot summer days. It felt like running away from Fred and George and Ginny, who were trying to throw snowballs at him. Perhaps that's why he liked this so much. Here, on this bench under the tree, he was just Ronald Bilious Weasley, sixth son of Arthur and Molly Weasley, overlooked by passers-by and often forgotten in a crowd. In the morning, when he woke up and walked through the door and exited the Muggle place, when he entered Diagon Alley or attended an event, he would hand out autographs. He would hold babies and smile for the cameras and try not to think of Colin Creevy. When he went back, he would be Ron Weasley, Order of Merlin First Class and hero in the Second Wizarding War. But here, now, he was just Ron.
"Delicious girl, what a treat. I do enjoy the softness of the skin."
Wrapping her coat tighter around her, Hermione hurried across the cafe and through the door at the back. She walked past the spot where her husband lay sleeping on an old bench, but she didn't look his way. She was late. Of course, that wasn't the reason why she didn't turn around. Being late didn't matter here. Or it did, but Hermione didn't care. The building was old and dirty, with peeling black paint and dark windows. There was no neon sign. Magic could only do so much. But the place gave off such an aura that it couldn't be mistaken for anything except what it was. When Hermione finally stumbled in the back door, vanishing her outer layer of clothing in the process, her boss scowled. She didn't need to hear words to know what he thought of her. To him, she was just a girl. To him, she was a paycheck. To him, she was nothing. Her music started, and she took the stage, dancing and gyrating to the Muggle song. It was cross and explicit and nothing she would usually listen to. It was perfect. The other girls, they were wonderful. They were smart and kind of sweet and deserved far more than being ogled by lecherous men who only wanted one thing. But for Hermione, this place, dancing on a stage while her husband slept on a bench outside, while her friend sat in the cafe at the entrance, it was everything to her. She needed this. Hermione made eye contact with the men who watched her, wanting, needing, to know what they wanted. They, too, didn't care who she was. They didn't care that she was Hermione Granger, brightest witch of her age, or Hermione Granger, Order of Merlin First Class. Because here, she was just Hermione Jean Granger, the ugly mudblood, desperate to prove herself in a world that had rejected her time and time again. After her shift, when she walked away and exited the Muggle place, when she entered Diagon Alley or the Ministry of Magic, she would work her fancy job. She would color-code her schedule and advocate for werewolf rights and try not to think of Remus Lupin. But here, behind the cafe on Fifth Street, she was just Hermione.
"And who is this?" he said in his soft snake's hiss. "Who has volunteered to demonstrate what happens to those who continue to fight when the battle is lost?"
Unable to stop himself, Neville's eyes quickly scanned the room when he entered it. It was just a cafe, a place full of muggles, but he couldn't be too careful. It wasn't until he reached the back door and went through it that he felt safe enough to unclench his jaw. Across the square, a figure lay on a bench. Another walked past, her head down. He paid them no mind. Tomorrow, he would ask them about the weather or their parents. But tonight, it wasn't his business. Just like he wasn't theirs. Taking a right, he turned away from them and headed towards the large, angry-looking man at the end of the alley. Money was exchanged. Neville handed over his wand before descending the crumbling stone steps and entering the door at the bottom. The basement room was large and round, and he could feel his blood start to thrum with the excitement of it. Neville stripped his shirt off when his name was called. Entering the ring, he saw a familiar face on the other side. They'd fought before, with more than just fists, but that didn't matter. Because here, no one cared if he had beheaded a snake or lost a Remembrall. They didn't give two fucks if he could grow a devil snare or survive round after round of the Cruciatus curse. No one cared that he was Neville Longbottom, hero of Hogwarts and protector of the weak. No one cared that he used to be awkward, or shy, or shit at potions. The man on the other side of the ring certainly didn't give a shit. Hadn't when they were kids either. Which is exactly why Neville came here. Because here, he was just Neville. Neville Longbottom, who could throw a punch hard enough to break a jaw, and could take a hit like a bloody giant. He didn't have to be the perfect husband, or grandson, or role model. Tomorrow, when he went back through the cafe and into the street, when he entered Diagon Alley or walked into Hogwarts Castle, he would be the star professor. He would teach the first years and make lame jokes and try not to think of Fred Weasley. But here, tonight, he was just plain, ordinary, unimportant Neville. The new master removed the wand from Dumbledore against his will, never realizing exactly what he had done or that the world's most dangerous wand had given him its allegiance. Draco nodded respectfully to his opponent. They'd fought before, of course, spouted insults and hurled curses like it was nothing, but this was different. The man deserved respect. Not for the past, something both of them liked to forget, but for the way he could punch and kick and fight like no one else in that place. Finished, he exited the building, walked up the stairs, and retrieved his wand from the large man. Draco made his way towards the hidden exit, but paused when he made it to the square. He looked down the street to the large black building. There were days where he slipped in the door, days where he watched the girl sell something the men could never lay a hand on. Those depraved souls could simply walk across the street to buy that. The red building allowed a buyer to do anything they wanted. Draco did sometimes, needing to feel like that spoiled little boy he used to be. Of course, that was the appeal, wasn't it? For some, the past had no place here at all. For others, it was only forgetting the last few years that mattered. And so here, in the ring or the two buildings or the square, Draco could be anything he wanted. No one cared where his money came from, as long as he could pay. No one cared if he could cast a curse or survive one. No one cared that he was a Death Eater. He was just Draco Malfoy, a man who could win a fight, then pay the bouncer or pimp to get whatever he wanted. After, when he exited that door and walked through the small cafe, when he entered Diagon Alley or walked into Gringotts Bank, he would be the model citizen. He would pay reparations and donate to Muggle charities and try not to think of Professor Burbage. But now, as he stood in the square beyond a Muggle building, he was just Draco.
"They'll be all right," said Harry, though he knew they were empty words. "Ginny, we'll be back in a moment. Just keep out of the way. Keep safe."
She passed the blonde man on her way through the cafe. She didn't acknowledge him. Merlin knew what he must think of her, but that didn't matter anymore. She didn't nod or smile or offer a bit of thanks when he held the door open for her. But then she didn't acknowledge anyone until she was in the room. She didn't say hello to a friend in the alley when he left the ring, or her brother in the square, or her sister-in-law in the building across the street. Wouldn't even greet her husband if she knew where he was. Ginny didn't acknowledge any of them unless they came to her, paid for her, just like everyone else here had to. Once she came through that door, she belonged to her boss, belonged to the man who owned the bright red building across from the black one. It didn't matter who came to her. Old or young, new or broken, Ginny would take them inside her. Her friends, her family, her enemies, she'd had them all. Because here she could feel alive again. No one cared she was a Weasley, the precious little girl in a house full of boys. They didn't care that she was now Ginny Potter, wife to the Chosen One. No, she was just Ginny, who liked to lay on her back and stare at the ceiling. Ginny, who liked to ride her customers because the feeling of being free again felt like flying on a broom for the first time. She could be anyone she wanted, and Ginny chose to be no one and nothing but a bundle of nerves and pleasure. In the morning, when she carefully snuck out of the cafe behind her brother, when she entered Diagon Alley or mingled with high society, she would be the perfect wife. She would smile demurely and laugh lightly and try not to think of Nymphadora Tonks. But here, for now, she was just Ginny.
"Sounds like a job for us," called Fred, indicating himself and George, and Kingsley nodded his approval.
He always wore a coat or a cloak with a hood. He needed something, anything, to hide his face from the stares and the whispers. From the mirrors. George always looked down at his feet when he entered the Muggle place, and he never paused until he was through the room and out the back door. It was a wonder he didn't trip over a chair or run into another patron, but they'd always been light on their feet, him and Fred. The air always seemed different here. Fresher, maybe. More relaxed. That was likely his nerves talking, anticipating his next hit, but he didn't much care. Turning left, he ducked down the street and into a small, dark shop.
When the owner saw George, he grinned a toothless, crooked grin. Money talked in this place. Despair and depression talked. The man bent low, grabbing the little red bottles from beneath the register before placing them on the counter. George handed over the sack of galleons. Then he left. There was a statue in the square he liked to lean against. Just sit on the ground and let the stone take his weight as the potion kicked in. Here, in this place, with the bottles in his hands, he could see him. George could see him clear as day, sitting next to him, and he wasn't alone anymore. Fred was there with him in those moments, with his wide grin and his sparkling eyes. Huddling next to the statue, it reminded him of simpler times, of hiding from filch and egging on peeves and setting off fireworks, of reading a charmed map and snickering at what they found. Just like back then, George spilled his secrets to his brother. He told his twin every feeling he had and every sin he committed. Later, after the potions wore off and the scent of his sister left his skin, when he entered Diagon Alley or revealed a new joke product, he would just be George. He would laugh the loudest and hide his scars and try not to think of Severus Snape. But here, in the magical square behind the Muggle shop, George was a twin again.
I speak now, Harry Potter, directly to you. You have permitted your friends to die for you rather than face me yourself. I shall wait for 1 hour in the Forbidden Forest. If, at the end of that hour, you have not come to me, have not given yourself up, then battle recommences. This time, I shall enter the fray myself, Harry Potter, and I shall find you, and I shall punish every last man, woman, and child who has tried to conceal you from me. 1 hour.
There was a little cafe in Muggle London that very few in the magical community knew about, and those who did know did not speak of it. Two friends could be found there at nearly all hours of the day, building and growing an increasingly codependent relationship because they had been through so much, and it seemed like all they had left was each other. A woman with wild brown hair walked in each night, looking harried and tense, only to leave several hours later, looking confident and pleased, with a small smile on her face. Two men walked in at roughly the same time each evening, and both often left with bruises and cuts and bloodied grins. It seemed like it never occurred to them to cast a healing spell. Three redheads would enter the cafe in the evening and leave in the morning, though never together, and never acknowledging the other. One would look relaxed and peaceful in the morning light. Another would stare wide-eyed at the mirror on the wall before shaking his head and leaving. The last, a woman, nearly always had swollen lips and a wide smile. Her eyes were dull when she entered, but sparkled whenever she left. Others came and went, of course. Witches and wizards with problems and vices of their own were forever walking in and out of the small back door. But those people didn't matter. Because out there, out in the real world, those 8 people were the smartest, bravest, funniest, most wicked, and most cunning people Harry Potter knew. And out there, out where the cameras flashed and the ministry flaunted, where families and co-workers and the world itself were overbearing and judgmental, Harry had destroyed them. But here, here in his little cafe, he could give them everything. He could indulge their vices and fulfill their fantasies and let them live. And he could do it all by being a nobody again. In the morning, when he closed and locked up, when he went to Diagon Alley or walked into the Ministry of Magic or attended an event, he would be the boy who lived twice. He would hug his friends and hold his wife and try not to think of every single person they ever lost. But for now, in this moment, in this place, he was just Harry. He was nothing but a shop owner, trying to serve tea and coffee and cakes to Muggles, while his friends found release just beyond Fifth Street. The End.